I was told earlier, I'm not going to mention any names, but there was, of course, already three great speakers that they've already heard this week. And so here it's Thursday, and we'll see if I can do a good enough job. We'll see what happens, but I appreciate the opportunity to come. I've always enjoyed being here to teach VBS for the adults, and my kids absolutely love it as well. And so again, thank you for coming today. There's a lot of information that we're going to be getting to, and mainly as you see the topic there on the chart entitled Look and Live. And the two topics that we had to choose from, or we could do both of them, was of course today the fiery serpents or the tabernacle. Well, we're going to spend a lot of time, of course, in the fiery serpents. But to work our way up to that, Numbers chapter 20. Go in your Bibles to Numbers chapter 20. Some of these verses will be on the charts, but as I like to always remind everyone, prove all things according to His Word, not mine, okay? Make sure it's God's Word as we go through these studies. Numbers chapter 20. I think we're pretty much familiar that the Israelites had some issues. I think we all understand that. They had a lot of issues. Numbers chapter 20, I wanted to back up a little bit before we get into our main text of Numbers 21. And I want us to read together to start out verse 2. Let's do that. Verse 2, down through verse 13. Now there was no water for the congregation, so they gathered together against Moses and Aaron. And the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, "If only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. Why have you brought up the assembly of the Lord into this wilderness that we and our animals should die here? And why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It is not a place of grain or figs or vines or pomegranates, nor is there any water to drink." So Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly to the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and they fell on their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather the congregation together, speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. Thus you shall bring water for them out of the rock, and give drink to the congregation and their animals." So Moses took the rod from before the Lord, as he commanded him, and Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock?" Then Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation of their animals drank. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them." Verse 13 now, this was the water of Meribah, because the children of Israel contended with the Lord, and he was hallowed among them. There's some other passages I want to read as we get on there, but we remember this account. This is actually a sad account, right? Moses has been in the thick of it, and with Aaron, and they've had a lot of challenges. And the reason why I think it's very important as we lead up to where we're going this morning with this is because they had this issue again about water, right? And this issue about water. And were the Israelites a complaining people? Yes, they were. They complained a lot, didn't they? They complained a lot. And you find in Numbers 20 that here they are murmuring, complaining yet against Moses and Aaron. And the sad, really, you know, we see a sad part here is that Moses and Aaron failed. They failed to honor God before the assembly. And we're going to talk about that as we get into our Numbers 21 here in a moment as well, because this is all going to be connected. We're going to see this and how we even look to our lives and how we act today. So they were unable to enter the land of promise. Going down to 14 through 21 now. I want to read that too, because this is going to play a significant role too. Now, Moses sent messengers from Kadesh to the king of Edom. "Thus says your brother Israel, you know all the hardship that has befallen us." Think about these words, hardship that has befallen us. It's been very difficult times, right? "How our fathers went down to Egypt, and we dwelt in Egypt a long time, and the Egyptians afflicted us and our fathers. When we cried out to the Lord, he heard our voice and sent the angel and brought us up out of Egypt. Now here we are in Kadesh, a city on the edge of your border. Please let us pass through your country. We will not pass through fields or vineyards, nor will we drink water from wells. We will go along the king's highway. We will not turn aside to the right hand or to the left until we have passed through your territory. Then Edom said to him, you shall not pass through my land, lest I come out against you with a sword. So the children of Israel said to him, we will go by the highway, and if I or my livestock drink any of your water, then I will pay for it. Let me only pass through on foot, nothing more. Then he said, you shall not pass through. So Edom came out against them with many men and with a strong hand. Thus Edom refused to give Israel passage through his territory, so Israel turned away from him. Think about this. The Israelites are getting close to what? Promised land. They're getting close, guys. They're getting close. They're on the edge. And here on their journey, they encounter this land of Edom. And they made a request. Obviously, they even said the word please. Please, you know, let us go through. Well, we see how that resistance came from the Edomites. And they had to take the long road. They had to take the long route. And really, we could spend a lot of time discussing prophecy of the nations. We could do a lot of that. But that's for another time. But as you continue on in that chapter, they make this journey from Kadesh to Mount Or. And what happens next in this chapter? Who dies? Aaron dies, doesn't he? And so I want you to think about trouble after trouble after trouble, right? They're having some difficulties. Moses and Aaron, they've obviously, in what happened in Numbers 20, the error there at Kadesh, there at the waters of Meribah, and then they can't go through Edom. Things are just kind of stacking up. And I want us to think about that, okay? Sometimes we can rail on the Israelites pretty hard, can't we? I mean, you know, we'll come out with sermons. You hear preachers all the time, oh, those Israelites, those complainers. Well, sometimes we should take a look in the mirror, shouldn't we? Because I've looked in the mirror a couple times in my life, and I'm like, you know, I might have more in common with them than what I'd like to admit. And that's about being honest with ourselves. And we need to be honest with ourselves in this class, and we'll talk about that. And so as the passage goes on, Aaron would die there at on Mount Or, as decided by the Lord, because as you see in chapter 20 and verse 24, Aaron shall be gathered to his people, for he shall not enter the land which I have given the children of Israel, because you rebelled against my word at the water of Meribah. Okay, there's consequences. We're going to tie that in, of course, to Numbers 21 as well. So keep that in mind as we go along. It's very important as you see the background and what's taking place here. So as you go to Numbers 21, let's also look at the first four verses here, first three rather, to start us here. The king of Arad, the Canaanite who dwelt in the south, heard that Israel was coming on the road to Ethrim. Then he fought against Israel and took some of them prisoners. Y'all see problems again? Here we go. So Israel made a vow to the Lord and said, if you will indeed deliver this people into my hand, then I will utterly destroy their cities. And the Lord listened to the voice of Israel and delivered up the Canaanites, and they utterly destroyed them and their cities. So the name of that place was called Hormah. Stop there. Okay, so we had some problems, a lot of them stacking up, but then we have a victory, don't we? Who did they call on? God. They called on God. They called on him, right? And they said, they made a vow to the Lord. They made a vow. If you will indeed deliver this people into my hand, look what we'll do. We'll make sure to take care of it, right? We're going to do. And the Lord listened to the voice of Israel, and he delivered up the Canaanites. They utterly destroyed them, their cities. Well, a lot of low points. But now we have a high point, right? Things are looking good now. Well, I wish we could end on that note, in a sense, right? Verse 4 through 9. Then they journeyed from Mount Or by the way of the Red Sea to go around the land of Edom, and the soul of the people became very discouraged on the way. Keep these words. Let me look at them. What he's saying, discouraged along on the way. And the people spoke against God and against Moses. Why have you brought us out of Egypt to die in this wilderness? Does that question sound familiar? I think we've heard that one a couple of times, haven't we? We have, right? All right. Well, what else does he say? For they say, for there is no food and no water, and our soul loathes this worthless bread. Okay. Let that one stick in your mind. So the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and many of the people of Israel died. Therefore, the people came to Moses and said, we have sinned, for we have spoken against the Lord and against you. Pray to the Lord that he take away the serpents from us. So Moses prayed for the people. Then the Lord said to Moses, make a fiery serpent and set it on a pole, and it shall be that everyone who is bitten, when he looks at it, shall live. So Moses made a bronze serpent and put it on a pole. And so it was, if a serpent had bitten anyone, when he looked at the bronze serpent, he lived. Let's spend time in that. Every time I read this passage, I think, not again. Not again. And again, as I mentioned a moment ago, it's easy to rail on the Israelites. It's easy to do that. And we get caught up in that sometimes. My son always likes to say, come on, you know, come on, you know. So here we go again. The Israelites are making that journey from Mount Or by the way of the Red Sea to go around the land of Edom and the soul of the people. How did it become? What was that key word we looked at? What did it say? Let's see. There it goes. Discouraged. Do y'all know what it's like to be discouraged? Have we ever been discouraged? Couple times maybe in our lives, maybe even this week we've had some things going on, we become discouraged. Some translation might use the word impatient. Impatient. And you know, you can look how that can work, because when you become discouraged, you can also become impatient, can't you? Okay, and some of those instances might be playing in your mind, and not to bring things up from the past about things that you have been through. I think about to some of mine that I have dealt with in my life, and I have become discouraged. I have become impatient with certain things. I found myself complaining, even when I was a child, you know, and my mother was trying to teach me about certain circumstances that was going on in our family life that I just was not understanding and was having a hard time, and I couldn't come to grips with. And thinking back on times where many times I like to use the words, we went ill. Because that's what discouragement does. Discouragement, when we allow things to settle into our hearts, we become ill. It's spiritually. And that's when the complaining starts. That's when the murmuring starts, right? Do you know that there's a passage in Psalms that speaks about Moses? That's one of the reasons as well that I want to bring up Numbers chapter 20. Because in Psalm 106, I want you to go there, Psalm 106. I don't have that one on the chart this morning, but Psalm 106, go there. And I want you to think about that, because in all that Moses was dealing with, and Aaron, they certainly had their problems, and complaint after complaint after complaint after complaint. We could go on and on and on. Go look at all those references of the children of Israel. And guess what? Sometimes we look at it as a breaking point. You ever have those? You get to that, it's a breaking point, right? I want you to look at Psalm 106. Look at verses 32 and 33. They angered him also at the waters of strife, which that's having reference to the waters of Meribah, okay? So that it went what with Moses? It went ill. It went ill with Moses on account of them. Verse 33, because they rebelled against his spirit, the Lord's spirit, so that he spoke rashly with his lips. So it's very interesting that you have this record here from the psalmist who, again, references these issues that were going on and how this can certainly affect our day-to-day lives. That how it went ill with Moses on the account of the Israelites due to their rebellion, so that he spoke rashly with his lips. Now, does that mean that Moses didn't have any control whatsoever? Moses had control, didn't he? We all have control. We kind of talked about that. We were talking about that with Tim King Tuesday. But again, think about what happens when we get discouraged or impatient. Think about that. And I again look to Moses, knowing from this recent experience that we read as to what ill effects will come when we are impatient, when we are discouraged in things. Remember that what we are seeing here is another generation repeating itself. Haven't y'all heard that? History repeats itself. And I can tell you right now, I'm just 39 years old, and I have already seen a lot of things repeating itself. So, you know, we come to grips with that, don't we? We see it. And yet when you go and you read throughout the book of Numbers, you're going to see that. And I think about the book of Numbers. It has been rightly called a book of murmurings. that's a good way to label that one. So look at verse 5 now. Verse 5. And the people spoke against God and against Moses. Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no food and no water, and our soul loathes the worthless bread. Okay, so in times past, they complained about not having provisions, right? And God's provided for them, hasn't he? Even here, we know that he's provided for them, because what do they loathe? The bread that he was given, the manna, right? So they're kind of upset. They're kind of upset about that. They've gotten tired. And again, I want us to make this connection in our day-to-day lives. We got to make this personal. This is very important, as I think about myself. It's very important to make it personal. Do some reflection. And think about how, and I go back to my kids, because the kids sometimes are like, oh, again, you know. But again, that kind of carries on into adulthood, doesn't it? We carry that attitude with us. And again, I tell people, I pour it all the time. I've been preaching, let's see, it's 20, 21, 22 years. And I have said this many times in the pulpit and Bible classes and things. I said, I don't want anyone to ever think that I'm more holier than thou, more perfect or anything. Because I'm not. As I've heard, I'm just a beggar who found bread. We'll talk about that in a minute. Just showing other beggars where the bread is at. And that's all that we are. And yet, you know, understanding that and keeping that humility, that again, that was another topic we were considering Tuesday in the class Tim was teaching. And so here God has provided, he has been providing for these people. Now go back and remind yourself here for just a second that it has not just been one bad thing after another, has it? God has provided for them, even after they complained. God would provide. And when they called on the Lord, remember chapter 21, how it started out? When they called on the Lord, they made a vow to the Lord, if you will. They were victorious. So, you know, God is taking care of them. He's taking care of them. What's the problem? It's a heart problem. It's a heart problem. And I think we would agree that don't we sometimes find ourselves counting our afflictions more than our blessings? Boy, that's a truth. Okay? I mean, think about that on a day-to-day basis. How many times will we talk more about what went wrong with a day than what went right with a day? Been guilty. Again, I'll admit it. I'm not going to sit here and tell y'all lies, right? We've all been guilty of this. And this really hits home. Especially when we as Christians have so much to be thankful for, don't we? Man, we have so much to be thankful for. Oh, we have so much. And especially as we go through this chapter, and we're going to make some connections here. So they protest God's provisions. The word that I like to use in this passage when I read this is contempt. That's a pretty strong word. They show complete contempt for God. And again, look what he's done for them. There's so much that he has done for them over and over again. Think about the deliverance. Okay? And again, we need to make that application here in a little bit as well for us. But they're like, we loathe this worthless bread that's actually sustaining them. It's keeping them alive. So they speak out against God, against Moses. And I tell you what, Moses, can we give him a little credit just a little bit? Because he has dealt with a lot, hasn't he? How would you have liked to have been Moses? Man, he had a tough job, didn't he? He had a tough job. Here we are. You brought us out of Egypt to die. Oh, wow, right? You brought us out of Egypt to die. Hear that? Here we go again in this wilderness. Been blessed with substance, water on their journey, victorious against the Canaanites just prior to this, and yet they're disgruntled. And there's so many lessons here. I want to connect a verse here. What New Testament verse comes to your mind when you think about complaining and murmuring? And there might be a couple of them you might think of. Anybody think about Philippians? What does Paul say? Philippians chapter 2, 14 through 16. What's he say to do? Do some things without complaining, disputing. Did anybody catch that? All things, that's right. Wait a second, prove all things. DJ said do some. No, it says do all things without murmuring, without complaining and disputing. Why is that important? Why does Paul say that's important that we do all things without complaining and disputing? What does he say? That you may become what? Blameless and harmless children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. Why? Because we shine among whom you shine as lights in the world. We shine as lights, and that's what Jesus told us to be, right? He said, you are lights to a dark world. And as Paul says, a crooked and perverse generation, and you're shining. How can you shine if you look just like the world? You can't. You can't. And so he goes on to say in verse 16, holding fast the word of life so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain or labored in vain. So, so important, right? So important. And again, I think about how often we can be like the Israelites in the book of Murmurings. And there's such a serious danger because we're told to be content, aren't we? We need to, and that's something that we are to learn, because Paul even said that, didn't he? That he had learned to be content. No matter what was going on, no matter the circumstance, he says, I'm going to be content in my life. We look at the Israelites. I'm not sure if I have found, I don't know if they were ever content. It's really hard to go through there and see it. It's just so difficult. And all the wonderful blessings and provisions that God bountifully and just richly blessed them with. So, as we see what happens though, you would think that the Israelites would have learned something by now. Because there were consequences to their complaining in the past. There were consequences to them not doing as the Lord commanded. So, shouldn't they have expected what's going to happen next? Wouldn't you think that they just, the light bulb come on, wait a second, somebody speak out and say, hold on, y'all remember? sometimes that memory problem, think about what happened. But they were so caught up in the moment, and they all just gathered together. And a lot of times when one starts it, guess what, everybody, well, you know what, you're right. So let's all complain together. Let's talk about how horrible it is. Let's count our afflictions. Let's not worry about these blessings. Let's with this worthless bread. Let's just, oh man. I don't care to be any part of this. I'm going to tell you right now. Verse 6, so the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and many of the people of Israel died. I have tried to picture this in my mind. And this is horrifying. I mean, if I don't know if you're a snake person or what, but I don't think this is just thinking about how horrific this scene was. Now, understanding that these snakes, these serpents, they packed a poison that was quite deadly. And the people, of course, what do they want to do now? I mean, they see people falling out, right? These snakes are biting, these serpents are biting, and then they're falling. They're dying. So what's their response? Sorry. Have you ever, I mean, think about this with kids. Sorry, I did this. And it's in that moment, it's like, we panicked, okay? Wait a second. Can we pause this for a second? Look, you know, I remember my dad grabbing that belt. I'm thinking, whoa, wait, hold on a second, Dad. I know you warned me once, you warned me twice. And I was the one to push the buttons. I know it's hard to believe, but I was. I'd push those buttons until my dad just said, that belt started sliding off those loops. And I'm thinking, I was wrong. I'm just kidding. You know, I'm sorry. I love you. You always say I love you, right? You always start with that one, okay? Because you start, you know, the little, you know, Dad just had, he had his two boys, you know, and they always say, well, now I have a little girl, two boys and a little girl, and the little girl is a little bit, whew, that one is a tough one. That one's a tough one. But that's what we tend to do with God a lot of times, don't we? You know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You know, all of a sudden now this bad stuff, you know, I mean, we had some stuff happen, but don't wait a second. This went to a whole different level. We have sinned. We have spoken against the Lord and against you. Wake up call, right? Wake up call. They want Moses to do what? Pray, intercede. Oh, please help us. Pray to the Lord that he take away the serpents from us. And what does Moses do? Prayed to God. That's it. We got to give Moses credit again, okay? Because we can learn some lessons from this too with Moses because, well, sometimes, you know, we think about how we've had problems in the past and things, and sometimes we might be like, he could have held a grudge against the people. Like, well, you deserved it. I'm not interceding for you people, you know? You know, I mean, look, y'all the one who did this. I tried to tell you. Have you ever said that? Have you ever said, I told you so? Yeah, I in your mind, you're sitting there thinking, he prayed for the people. Again, give Moses credit, okay? Yeah, he was not perfect by any means, but we got to give him some credit here, don't we? Now, I think that even Moses would understand that there's consequences to disobedience. He understands that because of what we read in Numbers chapter 20. And he's already witnessed Aaron die, didn't he? On Mount Hor as a result of rebellion. And Moses is not going to be able to enter the promised land. I mean, there's consequences. And yet, with these same people leading them still to the promised land, they're making their journey only for them to complain against him and God again. And they suffer the consequences. And that's something we always have to realize. There's consequences to our actions. There's always going to be some result of our action. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, they made a prophecy in verse 6. We're going to die in this wilderness.
Oh, yeah.
God only did what he needed to do. He fulfilled their prophecy.
That's right. That's right. He fulfilled it, didn't he? And the Lord says it, and it will be done. It will be done. And think about that. That's a really hard hitting thing that it's kind of interesting. You know, we've always been told, be careful what you ask for. Be careful what you say. Be careful. Well, there's a reason behind that, obviously, right? And here, Moses, they're begging Moses, please intercede for us. Help us. You know, and I could just see the panic. I think that would be a chaotic scene, to be honest with you. Again, playing that in your mind of how that, you know, hope you don't have any bad dreams about with this. But the people wanted the Lord to take the serpents away. Now, I think it's very interesting, because the serpents, I don't want to put this. That seems the easiest solution, doesn't it? Just take it away. Take it away. Get rid of it. We're sorry, get rid of it. And we'll be better. Right? Heard that before. And in their sense there, and if you go back, again, look at verse 7. Pray to the Lord that he take away the serpents from us. Just take it away, okay? Let them disappear and all will be well. I want us to think about that. Don't we do that with problems today? Take it away, but are we going to learn from it? Okay? What are we going? Is there something that we need to do? Look at Isaiah 55 verses 8 and 9 though. What's God's thoughts? They're not ours, okay? For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, says the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. My thoughts than your thoughts. Think about that. We have in our minds how we want God to handle certain things, right? Oh, I want you to just let this go away, disappear. You know, we're sorry, we'll move on. But this is what the Lord's solution. Verse 8, okay? The Lord tells Moses, he says, make a fiery serpent and set it on a pole, and it shall be that everyone who is bitten, when he looks at it, shall live. So you're saying that the snakes, the serpents, are not going to miraculously disappear. Is that what you're saying? So there's something that we're going to have to do. Okay. God's going to provide a way for the Israelites to be remedied from their malady. Now, I want you to kind of get in your mind here. What is the Lord doing? What is the Lord doing? Do you know what the Lord is doing here? Yeah, he wants them to do something. Yeah, he wants them to do something. And you look back to many examples in the Bible, just like Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Just because he found grace in the eyes of the Lord, did that mean that he was going to automatically be saved from the flood? He had to build an ark to the saving of his household, right? Faith coupled with works and obedience to God, right? We can go to James chapter 2. So they had to do something. It wasn't just, oh, the Lord, just take it away from us, we'll be good, right? Nope, can't do that. So it does play that they have to do something. And even with Lazarus raising from the tomb to bring that in, you know, when Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, he told the people to do what? He told them, take away the stone, right? So what does that teach us? The Lord could have moved that stone, couldn't he? He could have made it disappear. He could have had Lazarus walk through the stone. I mean, you know, he could have done whatever. But God never does for man what man can do for himself. See, the Lord provided the way to be healed, but you're going to have to do something. Okay? Grace and mercy, it's abundant. It's there, but you're going to have to do something. Okay? So it's playing into this faith here as mentioned. So, interestingly, they're going to look upon this serpent. Okay, we have this bronze serpent. I can, you know, again, getting the imagery in your minds about this scene, what's taking place. Moses did this as the Lord commanded him to do, and they would have to look so they could live. Okay, that's the only way that they could be remedied from their plight. Only way. They couldn't come up with other, you know, they're not, of course, I don't think they're in a situation here where they're like, can we do this? They're at this point like, whatever you want us to do, we'll do it, right? Okay. So the Lord provided for them to be saved, but they had to, as the lesson is entitled, look and live. Okay. Now we need to think about the point of this message that we're talking about. Is this really just another instance that the Israelites complained? Were punished, confessed, repented, and saved again by the wonderful, merciful Lord by providing the means by which they could be saved? Is this just another repeat here? Because this, I believe, is really an impressive and intriguing passage. And you might say, well, you know, we see a lot of similarities to the things in the past and so forth with them as the history repeating itself. But you know, the Lord is actually, in every deal we understand, the Lord teaches such a massive lesson. Such a massive lesson. Sometimes it's easy to miss it. It's easy to miss it. Sometimes we read passages and like, okay, the fiery serpents bit the people, right? The kids' song, you know, in Bible class, the fiery serpents bit the people. All right, we move on to Numbers 22. You know, we just keep going. But as the people are bit by the fiery serpents, and I want you to think about the venom, and I'm going to use the idea of the poison, okay? Get that imagery in your mind, the poison coursing through their veins. In agony, they're suffering. There was only one cure that could save them. Only one. There was no other option. The Lord provided, He said, this is your option. It's either you take it or you reject it and die. It's the only option. You're going to live or die. One of the two. And I wondered what the people may have thought when Moses had made that bronze serpent. You ever think about that? You know, thinking, what is this dude doing? What is he doing? He put it on a pole. Something so contemptible to look upon. Yet to look at it, to know that such would be what would save them, to give them life. Now, we're about to make a transition, in a sense, to something, you may have known this. But do you know that there are passages in the New Testament that refer to Numbers 21? Go to John chapter 3. Go to John chapter 3. John chapter 3, there's something very interesting we find here in John 3. And again, sometimes it's easy to miss things. I know I have in times. I just like reading the passages over and over again, and then something else. I mean, it's just, again, why it's the living word, right? And you remember who Jesus is talking to. He's talking to Nicodemus. Sometimes we call him Nick at night, right? Because Nicodemus came to Jesus by night. But there was a lot of questions that was on Nicodemus's mind, and he wanted to talk to Jesus about. And you know, Jesus, one of the questions Nicodemus asked Jesus, about how can these things be? I mean, he's talking about being born again in that passage. And Jesus said verse 10, are you the teacher of Israel and do not know these things? Most assuredly, I say to you, we speak what we know and testify what we have seen, and you do not receive our witness. Now look what he says in verse 12. If I have told you earthly things and you do not believe, how will you believe if I tell you heavenly things? Now verse 13 through 18. You see, I have that on the chart there. You can see that. 13 through 18. No one has ascended to heaven but he who came down from heaven, that is the Son of Man who is in heaven. And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up. Look at verse 15. He says that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. For God did not send his Son to the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. He who believes in him is not condemned, but he who does not believe is condemned already, because he has not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. I think that is a remarkable passage. I think that's a remarkable passage in connection with what we're thinking about, what Jesus is teaching here. Because Jesus is referring to what we're talking about this morning. Back to Numbers chapter 21. Referring back to when Moses, okay, lifted that serpent up in the wilderness, that bronze serpent, and in likeness of such, what did he say? The Son of Man must be lifted up. Get that imagery in your minds. Because with such, what he says, with Jesus being lifted up, Jesus goes on to say that whoever believes in him will have eternal life. You said it just a moment ago. Faith. Faith. Not just a faith that I believe that there is a God, because that's a mental acceptance. You know, we can have mental acceptance that there is a God, but do nothing with it. Weren't there people that did that? They believed that there was a God. They believed that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, but they don't do nothing with him. They don't do nothing with him. Okay, think about that. Faith coupled with works and obedience. Now, so He makes this point, being lifted up, referencing the cross that Jesus would be lifted up to die on, and Jesus would be the one way, the only way that one can have life. Y'all see that connection? Isn't that beautiful? That's such a beautiful connection. Think about the sin-sick souls and the poisonous, deadly venom, if you want to put it that way, sin that's coursing through our spirits, through our lives, our souls. Think about that. But the only way that we can have life is to look and live, to look at Jesus. I love that because the cross is representative of what? Death, isn't it? The cross is representative of death. The one who gave himself on it would become that which life could be obtained for all who would look to him, believing in him. Now, it's interesting as well that the Israelites, they found themselves in this predicament due to their own discontent. They were impatient. They were complaining. They were murmuring. They were rebellious. I think when Moses said, you know, rebels, I think he hit the nail on the head, okay? Because they were rebellious people, right? But what was that one that I kind of started hitting over again? You know, they were mad about, oh, no water, right? And they we're in this wilderness to die. But what was something that they said specifically loathsome? What did they loathe? This miserable food, this worthless bread. That was very specific. We loathe this miserable, this worthless bread. Yep. That sounds like it, don't it? And who provided that bread? God did. God provided it to sustain them. John 6. Go to John 6. Go to John 6. My time's going to run out, but I'm going to try to get John 6. We might remember from John chapter 6 here. You might remember Jesus talking about bread from heaven. Y'all remember that? Let's do some reading here. Start in verse 22. You'll see them pop up on the chart here in just a moment for John in verse 30 continuing on. But John 6 and verse 22. On the following day, when the people who were standing on the other side of the sea saw that there was no other boat there except that one which his disciples had entered, and that Jesus had not entered the boat with his disciples, but his disciples had gone away alone. However, other boats came from Tiberias near the place where they ate bread after the Lord had given thanks. When the people therefore saw that Jesus was not there, nor his disciples, they also got into boats and came to Capernaum seeking Jesus. And when they found him on the other side of the sea, they said to him, Rabbi, when did you come here? Then Jesus answered them and said, most assuredly I say to you, you seek me not because you saw the signs, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled. Do not labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you, because God the Father has set his seal on him. Then they said to him, what shall we do that we may work the works of God? Jesus answered and said to them, this is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he sent. Verse 30 now. Down to verse 40. Therefore they said to him, what sign will you perform then that we may see it and believe you? What work will you do? Our fathers ate the manna in the desert, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. Then Jesus said to them, most assuredly I say to you, Moses did not give you bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. Then they said to him, Lord, give us this bread always. And Jesus said to them, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst. But I said to you that you have seen me, and yet you do not believe. All that the Father gives me will come to me, and the one who comes to me I will by no means cast out. For I have come down from heaven, not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. This is the will of the Father who sent me, that of all he has given me, I should lose nothing, but should raise it up at the last day. And this is the will of him who sent me, that everyone who sees the Son and believes in him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up at the last day. Let that settle in for just a moment. Verse 32, my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. Okay? You know, Jesus does refer back to the manna that came down from heaven for their fathers to eat in the desert, as we saw there. But again, the true bread that verse 33 goes on to say, for the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. Think of that word, life. Life. Okay? And they say to Jesus, Lord, give us this bread always. Oh, we want it, right? We want this bread always. Then Jesus proceeds, and what does he do in verse 35? He identifies that bread, and he says, I am the bread of life. I am. I am the bread of life. And what's he say in verse 40? Everyone who sees the Son and believes in him may have everlasting life. And I will raise him up at the last day. I think even taking John 6, we see some huge similarities. Because what is also intriguing is if you continue on in John 6 is how the Jews treated Jesus. I can hear, they didn't say the exact words that we saw in Numbers 21. We loathe this worthless bread. But look what they did. They complained about him who is what? The bread of life. By their actions, by their words, by everything that they did, they were saying, we loathe this worthless bread. Because he said, I am the bread which came down from heaven. They loathed him. Absolutely loathed him. The Israelites didn't care for the bread that the Lord provided for them in the wilderness. And again, in John 6, the people are murmuring. And you know what they're doing? What did we say earlier? History repeats itself. Here they are. Just like their ancestors, doing the same exact thing, now with Jesus, the bread of life. They complained, they did not care for what Jesus said of himself, that he's the bread of life, that Father God provided for life to the world. But what happened on the cross of Jesus being lifted up as he said of himself in John 3? The numerous other passages that we could look at was so that he could be the remedy for the sin coursing through the souls. How many today have murmured at the remedy? How many? That's a hard-hitting question. You know, and we understand that the remedy, because the Israelites were only given one remedy, and that was to look to the bronze serpent that was on the pole that Moses had put there for them to live. That was the only remedy. The only remedy for us. Go into all the world, preach the gospel to every creature. He who believes and is baptized will be saved, but he who does not believe will be condemned. Faith coupled with works and obedience to God. And the attitude that we noted there in Numbers 21 and John 6, it still exists in 2021. Do you know that? Did you know that history is still repeating itself today? Still. It's still happening. There's another passage that might have been on your minds already from Hebrews. Do y'all know which one it is? From Hebrews, Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. It says, therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us. And let us run with endurance the race set before us. Look at verse 2. Looking. Did y'all see that? Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Friends, this passage really, again, making applications to our lives today, making it personal, is that we can turn away and resist looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. We can do that. We can be just like the Israelites, complaining and murmuring, just like the Jews were doing with Jesus in John 6. By failing to look, we will most certainly die like those of the Israelites. And there's many people that, when you think about that word looking, it means fixating your eyes on Christ. Fixating them. Think about what happened to Peter. He was looking at Jesus when he stepped out. We got to give him credit because he stepped out of the boat, right? We got to give Peter credit too. Peter stepped out of the boat and he started walking towards Jesus on that water. What happened? He looked away, didn't he? His attention got divided. And the great divider of attention is going to be Satan. He will definitely do that. And so Peter started looking around going, well, there's problems over here, there's problems over there, you know. He became disheartened, didn't he? And then Peter began to sink. Then he called out to Jesus, and the Lord lifted him up. And what was it, the question that Jesus asked him? He said, oh, ye of little faith, why did you doubt? Go back to faith. Faith. You see, I don't know how many think about those that were doubting God and doubting His provisions and doubting all the things that He'd done for them. That's very dangerous territory. And I think that Numbers 21 really does pack a punch to us into the heart, because again, when we look in the mirror of God's Word, we see, well, you know what? I have found myself in the guilty section with them. We've been guilty just like they, by counting our afflictions more than our blessings, giving God thanks for all that He has done for us. And again, fixating our eyes, constantly trusting the Lord. And so, the Israelites, bitten by the fiery serpents, could stubbornly refuse to look. They could do that. And they could fix their eyes trustingly. However, on the other hand, at the bronze serpent on that pole, and by faith to be remedied from their plight. But friends, if they just stubborn and continue to do what they were doing, we talk about, again, this kind of goes back to Tuesday, about hardening the heart, right? And what happens after that is death is going to be the result. Because what does Romans 3 and verse 23 say? Well, not that. Well, it's not up there. I thought I had it up there. Romans 3 and verse 23, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. What's Romans 6 verse 23 say? The wages of sin is death. Death. Sin coursing through. And I like to use the imagery. I like to use the imagery in my mind. It helps me, because I think about the agony and being burdened down with sin. And that's what that was happening to them. They were burdened down with some venom. Okay? They had coursing through their bodies, and I can't even imagine what that was like. And it was killing them. It was killing. It was destroying the people. And to realize that Jesus and what He did for us, to be able to be the remedy for sin, we should always be thankful. And we should always fix our eyes, because He gives life, life eternal. And we should always want to look and live. I'm going to open it up for any questions, comments, or anything as we close the class. I know it's the time He gave me 5 minutes, and I've been speaking along. I appreciate y'all's interaction with me on that. Questions? Anything else?
Sir?
Go ahead. Right. That's right. And you think about the teachings, how important that is, that the Lord was trying to get, Moses, he had his hands full. He had his hands full, didn't he? And I think we can also learn a lesson from that. We got to make sure that we stay focused on what our mission is. A minute. That's right.
And that shows a weakness of faith.
That's right.
And so we've got to remember not to let that happen.
Don't let doubt sink in, because it will.
Just real quick, to give you that comment further.
Go ahead.
When we give our problems and our troubles over to Him, we need to leave them there.
Leave them. We like to hang on to stuff, don't we? We hang on to it. But, you know, we won't have that peace that surpasses all understanding if we don't do, as Peter told us, cast all your cares upon Him, for He cares for you. He cared for the Israelites. He cared for them. But boy, they didn't care for Him a lot of times. Right. We should learn. You know, but that's the thing is, you know, the Israelites, they had a learning. Now, I was that kid too. Mom told me, don't you touch that stove. It's hot. Psst. I'm like, she's right. And then I do it a second time. What's wrong with me? You know, what's wrong? You know, my brother always thought there's something wrong with him. But, you know, we do that. We do that. And we bring that along with us, and we want to carry stuff along. And, you know, those burdens keep just tacking up, and then bitterness sets in. Then, I mean, we could go in a whole bunch of different directions with this, but we do that. And the Lord telling, let it go. Let it go. Because otherwise, if Paul would have hung on to all those things that he had, horrible things he had in his life, he would have become discouraged, disheartened. He would have turned out just like you see with the Israelites here. And remember what we said in Psalm 106, it will become ill with us if we become discouraged or impatient, whichever word you want to use in that. It's going to make us ill spiritually. And physically, actually, it will do it too. Do you know that? It'll be a pretty heavy burden on us. It'll happen. And that's such powerful lessons. There's so many here. Obviously, we don't have the time to get into all of them, but hopefully that this has stimulated your thoughts as it has mine. This is one of my passages I love to, again, when we think about self-reflection and about the problem of complaining, and going back to Philippians chapter 2, do all things without murmuring and complaining. I think we all say we have a lot of work to do in that area. DJ is the first and foremost, okay? I'm not standing here saying, DJ, don't ever do that. It's a work in progress. I said, there's a sign to hang around my neck, work in progress, folks. You're seeing him right here, okay? My wife would probably say, yeah, that's appropriate sign for you. So, especially with kids, you know, especially with kids. Well, they punch buttons. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. My parents says, you'll understand one day. Oh, they were right. I get it now. I get it. But we want to always make sure that we look, because look to Jesus. Keep your eyes focused on, don't let doubt settle in, because you're going to, just like Peter, you're going to look away and you're going to be distracted by other things, the problems and all of that. You're going to dig up some things and it's just going to sink you further and further down until, unfortunately, like those in the examples that we've seen already, this week. Like a Pharaoh in heart in the heart, not having humility. You know, those are all connected things there. All right. Well, I think that's going to be the class. I know that they're getting ready. So anyone else? Go ahead.
You need to understand more.
That's right. That's right. Understand more. And take those experiences that we go through, learn from them. Don't repeat them. Don't repeat them. Learn from them. That's right. And we need to stick to the Word of God and see that His promises are true. Just like with the Canaanites. They had victory. They had problems, but they had victory. But they always focused on the afflictions rather than the blessings, and to see what was in front of them. They were like it was like they were looking in rearview mirror all the time. All the time. And if you go down the road looking in rearview mirror, you know what you're going to do? You're going to wreck. That's what's going on in this area for sure. I come from Burkeville, Texas, Center Texas area. Traffic ain't nothing like here. We had problems with, it might be a tractor get in your way, you know, or some cows or something. But here it's like, don't you dare look in that rearview mirror for long. But we can't do that with our lives. Don't look in the rearview mirror. Stay fixated. Look straight ahead at Jesus. Don't get off task. All right. Thank y'all so much for having me. Appreciate so much the class with y'all. God bless.